based on Brahminical culture or guided by Brahmanas is certainly a condemned civilization. Presently, human civilization is based on sense gratification, and consequently, more and more people are becoming addicted to different types of things. No one respects Brahminical culture. Demonic civilization is attached to Ugra Karma, horrible activities, and big industries are created to satisfy unfathomable lusty desires. Consequently, the people are greatly harassed by governmental taxation. The people are irreligious and do not perform the sacrifices recommended in Bhagavad Gita. Yajne Bhavati Parjanya. By the performance of sacrifice, clouds form and rain falls. Due to sufficient rainfall, there is sufficient production of food. Guided by the Brahmanas, society should follow the principle of Bhagavad Gita. Then people will become very happy. Anna Bhavati Bhutani. When animals and man are sufficiently fed with grains, they become stronger. Their hearts become tranquil and their brains peaceful. They can then advance in spiritual life, life's ultimate destination. Om Agyan Timirandhasya Gyanan Janashalabhaya Chakshuru Viritan Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishnam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shivasati Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So in this verse, we hear Srila Prabhupada saying some very cutting statements. And he also mentions the present state of where we are at in Kali Yuga. And then he also mentions where we should be. So, Srila Prabhupada mentions, you know, he explains the verse, Kalyuga Shudra Sambhava. In this Kali Yuga, everybody is a Shudra. So nobody is a Brahmana, nobody is a Kshatriya, nobody is a Vaishya. Everybody is a Shudra. Everybody is in the platform of a very degraded lifestyle. And Srila Prabhupada in this purport is urging us all to elevate ourselves from this degraded situation to a very elevated position of being Brahmanas or following a Brahminical culture. So he says we should follow the Brahminical culture. So in the Krishna book in chapter 64, Lord Krishna himself actually very elaborately describes the position of these Brahmanas and these saintly beings who follow this Brahminical culture. So that's in that chapter is the passing of King Vrigha. King Vrigha was a great king and he was known for his charitable disposition. He was ritualistic, Prabhupada mentioned he wasn't ritualistic. But at the same time, he was very favorable towards protecting the Brahmanas and the cows. He used to give thousands and thousands of cows in charity every day. So this one time, he decided to give cows in charity. And he gives a lot of cows in charity. These are not ordinary cows. It is mentioned that these cows have horns which are gold-plated. Imagine gold-plating the horns of thousands and thousands of cows. So those cows had horns which were gold plated and their hooves had silver plating. That is how much attention he paid to the kind of charity he wants to give, that he's making sure they are the best of the night. So he was giving charity of these cows which were, and they were not only having these horns and hooves with plating, but they had other ornaments and they were bedecked with pearls and jewels. So, and these are very strong and healthy cows. So he used to give these kind of cows to Brahmanas every day. And not just cows, he used to give to Brahmanas all other kind of opulences like household furniture, clothes, jewelry, gold, whatever they needed, he would give them to brahmanas. So he did that one day, and the next day he again donated cows to another brahmana. But it so happened that out of the cows that he had donated to one brahmana, one of the cows wandered off and came back from that herd and came back to King Rira's shed. So, and then, so next day, not knowing, not aware of the situation, King Riga again donated that cow to another brahmana. So this brahmana, who originally had this cow donated to him, came back and asked King Riga for the cow. And King Riga realized that this cow which he had donated the first day, he again ended up donating it the second day. Now this created a situation for him. So he went and he requested the brahmana on the second day who had taken the cow, that you please return this cow because originally I had donated it to this particular brahmana and he would like to have it. But the second brahmana said that you have given it to me now in charity, I cannot give it back to you. He again pleaded, he said, I will give you 100,000 cows of equal caliber, of equal health in lieu of this one cow so I can resolve this issue. But both the brahmanas refused. They refused to take the 100,000 cows. So this complicated the situation, and anyway, both the brahmanas went away feeling a bit unhappy. But you see, this is a situation that was not in control of King Rida, but he ended up offending the qualified brahmanas. So this one time when sons of Krishna, Pradyumna, Samba, with all their younger brothers, they wanted to go for a picnic in the forest just on the outskirts of Dwarka. So they went there and they were having a picnic. And you know, in those days, nobody carried water bottles. If you needed to drink water, so you just go to a well, you find a water bottle like a river or a lake, those kind of things, and they were clean drinking water was easily available. So they walked around in the forest and they found this well. So they looked inside the well, but they didn't find any water in the well. Instead of that, they found a huge lizard. And it was a wonderful lizard, huge lizard. And the sons of Lord Krishna, they felt that this lizard is stuck in this well. And so they tried to get him out. They all helped each other, tried together to get him out of the well, but they did not succeed. So anyway, they come back home to their palace in Dwarka and they tell their father, Lord Krishna, about what they saw, that they saw this beautiful lizard that is stuck in a well. So then Lord Krishna, obviously, he's all-knowing, he understands. So the next day, he comes to that well with his sons and he gets the lizard out. And the minute he touches the lizard, that lizard transforms into a beautiful demigod, a very effulgent personality with a golden helmet and beautiful garments and ornaments. So Lord Krishna asks him who he is. So then King Riga describes his past life. He narrates his past time that I was King Riga. I was known for being very charitable and I donated cows like this to the brahmanas. But because of this one cow who came back, both of them went off dissatisfied. So then at the end of his life, King Riga says that he was at the end of his life as King Riga, then he went to Yamaraj and Yamaraj had asked him, would you like to suffer for your sinful deeds first or would you like to enjoy the good karma for the piety, for which is like immense piety he had accumulated by being so charitable in his life as King Riga. So he says, I would first like to suffer for my bad karma, for my bad deeds. So immediately Yamaraj had turned him into a lizard. And this is how he ended up here as a lizard in the well. And of course he was fortunate enough to be face to face with Lord Krishna and was touched by Lord Krishna, which turned him into a demigod. So here Srila Prabhupada mentions that because he was very charitable, although he was ritualistic, King Yuda was very charitable and very favorably disposed towards cows and brahmanas. And he had this desire. Even as a lizard, he was meditating on the Lord and he had this desire to see Lord Krishna. So he ended up seeing Krishna face to face, which is very, very rare even for great saintly persons who meditate and see him. In the heart, they can see him as Paramatma, but to see him face to face is very rare. So Srila Prabhupada mentioned that King Mrigaya had this good fortune of being able to see the Lord face to face. So here, at this juncture, when King Mrigaya narrates his pastime, then Lord Krishna takes this opportunity to instruct his sons and other members of Yadu dynasty who were present there about the consequences of offending Brahmanas. So he describes in great detail that to even touch the property of a Brahmana means for three generations before and after you, they will be ruined. And to actually steal the property of a Brahmana would lead to consequences such that 10 generations before you and 10 generations after you will be ruined. So he also mentions that these Brahmanas, they should not be offended under any circumstances. Even if a Brahmana curses you or rebukes you for any reason, and even if you think it is not genuine, you should not retaliate. On the contrary, you should pay obeisances to these Brahmanas. So in this way, Lord Krishna describes, and he also warns his children, and he also warns the members of Yadu dynasty regarding the greatness of the qualified Brahmanas. And he says that one who offends a Brahmana ends up becoming a serpent in his next life, and then he goes on offending others even in after that life. So you see, it's the potency, the spiritual potency of the Brahmanas used to be so great that in those days they didn't need a matchstick to light the fire. They could light a fire just by chanting the mantras. So this is how great those Brahmanas were. So in the childhood pastimes of Lord Krishna, it is mentioned that Nanda Maharaj used to call these kind of qualified Brahmanas at home, and he used to feed them prasadam, and he used to give them lots of charity. And he used to request them to bless little baby Krishna, because every now and then little baby Krishna used to be attacked by some demons. So Nanda Maharaj and Madhuri Shoda used to honor these Brahmanas, and they had great faith in the potency of these Brahmanas, because their blessings used to come true. But you see, these days when the Brahmanas have no potency left because they are not forming, they are not following that Brahmanic culture. So what makes these Brahmanas so potent? What gives them this spiritual strength that they are able to perform these kind of tasks, like they are able to give a blessing that comes through, and they are able to give the curse that comes through? So Srila Prabhupada, in that chapter, in chapter 64 of Krishna book, he elaborates, he tells that they used to follow the Brahminical culture, and he describes that these Brahmanas, they did not hold wealth like the Kshatriyas or the Vaishyas. They used to voluntarily accept poverty so that they did not become distracted by the opulence. You see, because when there is opulence, then we tend to deviate towards materialistic life. So these Brahmanas used to voluntarily avoid opulence, and they used to voluntarily accept the life of poverty so that they could focus on the ultimate goal of life. And these Brahmanas used to cultivate spiritual knowledge. Srila Prabhupada says, when one cultivates spiritual knowledge, then automatically you are able to focus on the ultimate goal of life. These Brahmanas used to perform a lot of austerities and penances. They used to perform a lot of activities for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. And they saw everybody as equal. They were not discriminating amongst people on the basis of their attitude towards them. They were Pandita Samadarshana, means they were equal to all. They saw everybody in an equal vision. So these kind of qualities these qualities make one a qualified Brahmana. And then also in the Brihadaranyaka composition, it is described who is a Kripana and who is a Brahmana. A Kripana is the one who does not see the problems of materialistic life. Means he ignores the problems of birth, disease, old age and death, and he continues to live a materialistic life. But a Brahmana is the one who is able to see that these are the real problems of life, birth, disease, old age and death. And they want to transcend these problems. They want to overcome death and live an eternal life. So one who utilizes his human form of life to understand who the Supreme Lord is and what is our relationship to the Supreme Lord, and then engages in devotional service to fulfill that relationship. That is the one which is described, he is considered to be a qualified Brahmana. So therefore, that's why it is mentioned that these Brahmanas, Jaya Krishna says that they are very dear to him. And as this verse says that he is more pleased when these Brahmanas are fed than if you put the sacrifices in the fire, yajna fire. And these Brahmanika qualities are also found like in Guru Vrindavan. If you see that, you know, they were cowherd boys, they were cowherd men. But Guru Vrindavan may be full of cowherd men, but they had Brahmanika qualities in them. For example, you know, in the pastime of Rinkosura, when Lord Krishna and Balaram take all the cowherd boys to the Talal forest, and they go there to eat the fruits, and they the desire to eat the fruits there. But then when the Rinkosura hears the noise, he becomes very annoyed, he becomes disturbed, and he and his demon ass friends come to attack Krishna and Balaram. And Krishna and Balaram, for them, it's just another, you know, playful act that they just twirl them around and throw them up in the trees. So these demons are coming up from the trees, very fun sight and an amazing sight for all the cowherd boys. And they feel elated that Krishna and Balaram have, killed these demons who came to attack them. But then at the same time, they saw that these tala fruits, that these fruits they had come to eat, had become contaminated with the blood of these animals. So they didn't touch, they didn't eat any of these fruits. So they, even though they were little boys, you know, Prabhupada explains in that pastime, that they were little boys, but they understood that it is not suchi now, it is not clean for them now to eat these fruits. So Brahmika culture prevailed everywhere, and even in Golok Vrindavan, and these simple cowherd boys, these cowherd men and gopis, they were well aware of all these Brahmanika principles. So just from the Vedic scriptures, we know that they have Brahmanas, different kinds of Brahmanas, different classes of Brahmanas exist, such as some are like ritualistic Brahmanas, some are Mayavad Brahmanas, some are Brahmavadis, and some are Brahmana Vaishnavas. So Brahmana Vaishnavas are very rare. You see, as Vaishnavas, we follow like chanting the holy names of the Lord, and we understand the philosophy that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we need to engage in devotional service to attain our ultimate goal. And the ultimate goal is that we need to go back home, back to Godhead. So these are the Vaishnava principles that we follow as devotees. But if they are not supported by Brahmanika values, and if they are not supported by the Brahmanika culture, then it is very difficult to progress spiritually. You know, because Srinath Prabhupada himself says, first be conscious and then be Krishna conscious. What does that mean? That means that you first learn the Brahmanika way of life. Be aware of what is your conduct, how do you conduct yourself with other devotees, how do you do your services, how do you do your work, how do you conduct yourself at home, what are your dealings with your family members. So this constitutes a Brahmanical way of life. So qualities such as truthfulness, cleanliness, austerity, simplicity. So these qualities, Krishna himself says in Bhagavad Gita, that these qualities are very dear to me, and one who follows these practices, these qualities, they are also very dear to me. So this way, they are both interlinked. As long as we follow the Brahmanika culture, then we are able to progress spiritually as well. So for example, deity worship is all about cleanliness, paying attention to detail, following the instructions of the spiritual master or the seniors in how to go about doing it. So All these qualities, they come from Brahminical culture. So they are values, they are Brahminical values. Cooking for the deities, paying attention to detail of the ratio and proportions of the ingredients that go into a recipe. So these are supported and truthfulness. You see, if we don't follow these, for example, in deity worship, then it is, we could be creating seva pran. We are committing seva pran if we are not following them. Similarly, if we are in a dealings with other devotees, if somebody asks you something and you are not truthful, you know, we go round about and we go, you know, give round about answers and or we are diplomatic, then we are disturbing other devotees. And I think that can constitute Vaishnava pran. So that's why these principles are very important, because they help us progress. If we follow them, and if we don't, they can lead to seva pran, they can lead to nama pran, they can lead to Vaishnava pran. So we have to be very mindful. So basically it is a character, how we conduct ourselves, right? So basically we just act out of knowledge, be aware of knowledge. So it is also mentioned, or mentioned, you know, in Bhagavad Gita, sattva sanjati jnana. So mode of goodness also is very important, getting up early in the morning. Like Srila Prabhupada himself says in Prabhupada, in Lilamrita, that one who is serious about spiritual life will definitely rise early in the morning. So if one is doing that, then it's a Brahminical quality, it's an austerity to rise early in the morning. But if we are following that austerity, then automatically we are also able to chant the rounds when the modes are supporting us, when mode of goodness is present, and when mode of passion and ignorance is a little dormant, we are not bothering so much. So if we follow this Brahminical culture, it helps us in so many ways to progress spiritually. Srila Prabhupada in the purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 1-13, Athapumbi Vijashesha Varnashama Vibhagascha Swanandhispasadharmasya Samsithi Hari Doshanam. So how does the Goswami here address the sages of Lamishwarnaya? He says, Athapumbi Vijashesha, O best among the twice born. So who are twice born? Best among the twice born means they are those, we have parents, we are the father and mother, and then we have, when we take initiation, then the guru is our father and spiritual knowledge is our mother. So Srila Prabhupada explains that Brahmanas, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, they must be twice born. And if somebody is only once born, means they don't take the shelter of a guru, then they are Shudras, means they are living a materialistic way of life. So the father is the guru, right? So when we take initiation, then the guru becomes our father, he's a spiritual father, and that's why we are born twice. When we take initiation, then we are our life starts. We are reborn, we are reborn as a Vaishnava. Then we follow spiritual life, then we follow spiritual values. And some siddhir hari toshanam. So Srila Prabhupada explains here also that we have to, somehow or the other, we have to satisfy the Supreme Lord. If we are conducting ourselves in such a way, we are performing spiritual life in such a way that the Supreme Lord is pleased, then everything is perfect. He says that everything is good. And then he also there, we see an example of Queen Kunti. And how she always was praying to the Supreme Lord for more and more hardships in life, because she recalled all the times when she had all those hardships, and she mentions how Krishna was always present. And in one of the lectures, Prabhupada mentions how Hari Toshanam can actually satisfy the entire world. And he gives the example of Draupadi, when Draupadi and all the Pandavas were in the forest. And they were living, they were in exile because Duryodhana had, you know, put them in a situation, they had to live in the forest, although they were kings. So when they were living in the forest, and they were living like very, living in a very austere life, living in a hut, they were eating simple roots and fruits, whatever was available in the forest. So this was one time Draupadi wasn't a queen anymore. She had cooked and all the Pandavas had eaten, and then finally she ate her lunch and there was nothing there. So Duryodhana knew this. He knew their routine. So Durvasa Muni had come to meet Duryodhana. And Duryodhana, after looking after Durvasa Muni really well and taking care of him, what his blessings, then he suggests to Durvasa Muni to go and visit the Pandavas as well in the forest. You see, knowing well that the Pandavas will not have sufficient food grains to feed Durvasa Muni and his 60,000 disciples. So he was trying to create more trouble for the Pandavas. So he suggested to Durvasa Muni to go to visit the Pandavas and to bless them as well with his presence. So Durvasa Muni, the 60,000 disciples, he rocks up at the Pandavas' kutir, at their hut. And of course, the Pandavas being their nature, they receive him with welcoming, but then they suddenly realize, how are we going to feed all these disciples who have come with Durvasa Muni? So then they request Durvasa Muni to go and take bath in the river nearby along with his disciples, and in the meantime they will prepare something. And Draupadi is in great anxiety because there is nothing left. So she had this thought where, unless and until she doesn't take her meal, then she can get unlimited prasadam out of that pot and she can feed any number of people. But because she had already had her meal, so now there was nothing left there. So she was in great anxiety and she thought of Krishna. She called out for Krishna because she knew that Durvasa Muni was a great sage, but he also was angered quickly. And if he wasn't satisfied, he could end up cursing them. So Draupadi was thinking along these lines when suddenly Lord Krishna comes there and he says, Draupadi, can you give me something to eat? And Draupadi says, well, that's my problem. I won't have anything left to give to anyone to eat now. What do I give you? He says, just bring me the pot. Just bring the pot to me. And then Lord Krishna from the pot, he just takes one grain of food. He just takes that one grain and he eats that one grain. So Hari Doshanam, when the Lord eats that one grain, he becomes completely satisfied. And while these Durvasa Muni and the 60,000 disciples, they are bathing in the river, suddenly they start feeling very full. They feel like they are so full that they can't even put a single morsel of food in their mouth. And then Durvasa Muni also thinking, we go back and they cook a huge meal for us. And we say no, then Draupadi's husband Bhima will be angry at us. They got afraid of Bhima and they said, okay, let's just go from here. And they never went back to their ashram. After bathing, Durvasa Muni and his disciples just left. So you see, when the Lord becomes satisfied, then everybody becomes satisfied. So the purpose of the Brahminical culture is to satisfy the Supreme Lord. It is for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. So Srila Prabhupada explains how, by somehow or the other, he says you should satisfy the Supreme Lord so that everybody is satisfied in that way. So another important point that Srila Prabhupada brings up in his purport is that he talks about Ugra Karma. He talks about how the present civilization is demoniac civilization, and because of this demoniac civilization, the purpose of the demonic civilization is to get more and more so we can satisfy ourselves. But the consequence of this effort to get more and more is that the supplies from Mother Nature are becoming more and more scanty. They are becoming less and less. And Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 1.10.4, he says, the more we try to use things that Mother Nature gives us for our own sense gratification, and we desire unnecessary things for sense gratification, the less and less supplies will be provided by Mother Nature. You see, because during the reign of Yudhishthira Maharaj, it is mentioned that the clouds showered enough rain, it was sufficient rainfall to the satisfaction of all the people. and the earth produced all the necessary food grains, vegetables, fruits, minerals, jewels, whatever was needed was sufficiently supplied by Mother Earth. And the fatty milk bags of the cows, they moistened the pasturing grounds, which means milk was available in abundance. You see, all the necessities of human life were provided in sufficient quantities. Why? Because that was a Brahminical society. Yudhishthira Maharaj was a Rajarishi or a saintly king, and he was guiding the residents of his kingdom towards the ultimate goal of life. That's why there was abundance at that time. But contrary to that, if we see the situation in present day, as Prabhupada says, you know, we are trying to accumulate unnecessary objects for our satisfaction of our material desires, and as a result of that, what is happening? There is only more unrest. There is even the basic necessities are not being met. There are food shortages, there are droughts, there are famines, there are diseases. We are suffering from all these things these days. So Srila Prabhupada says, he says, we only need to focus on land and cows, right? Krishi and Goseva. So we protect the cows and we do activities relating to the land, and Mother Earth will give us enough to provide for our needs. And abundance, she gave us an abundance to provide for our needs. Now I was reading an article these days. There's a project in which they're trying to mitigate the heat islands. So they say in present day cities, they have become heat islands, which means that because of lack of trees, there is a lot of heat that is created in the cities. And what is the solution that they have found to this? The solution they have found to this is by planting more trees. You see, because what has Ugrakarma done to our to Mother Earth? Ugrakarma means putting more and more factories, more and more industries. And we are clearing out the forest land to put these industries. And when forests are gone, then the water cycle, the rains, they completely become imbalanced. So, you know, in the water cycle, what happens? The rains, the water evaporates from the water bodies, from rivers, lakes, ponds, from the oceans. The water evaporates, goes up. So evaporation, and then high up in the sky, it condenses because it's cold, so it becomes clouds. And then, when it becomes heavy, then precipitation or rainfall happens. You see, but in this cycle, the role played by trees is not specified clearly, because I remember in schools and colleges when I was young, schools and even here in schools, they teach this water cycle. But the crucial role of trees is missed out, because now they're trying to realize that trees, they provide so much, they also contribute to rainfall, like they lead to evaporation. So one of the studies shows that a mature tree, you know, when it gets enough, it absorbs. So we know trees absorb water from the ground, and they suck it up through their root, goes up into their leaves, branches, and that's how they get all the nutrition that they need. And then, based on the need of the atmosphere, like if it's very hot and dry outside, they transpire, means they release water into the air. So, have you ever had this experience that when you're standing in the sun in a hot day, you feel hot? But the minute you stand in a cluster of trees, you suddenly feel cool, it's cooling. Why is it cooling? Because not only because of the shade that the trees provide, but also because of the evaporation that is coming out of the leaves. The leaves are releasing water, and that causes the surrounding area to become very cool. And one of the studies actually shows that a mature tree can provide, can transpire as much as 150 liters of water in a day, which is equivalent to two air conditioners running for 20 hours. Now just imagine, that's a significant amount of cooling that's given by just one tree. So 150 liters of water comes out of a tree, and it is given out to the environment around the tree to keep it cool. and it is equivalent to 2 air conditioners running for 20 hours. So in this way, the trees contribute, but what else do they do? The trees, they hold the ground together, so they prevent soil erosion. Plus the water that they absorb, they actually filter it out and then they transpire clean water. So with this Ugrakarma, the two most important things that we need to live, we are destroying that, right? Clean air to breathe, which is given by trees. Trees taking carbon dioxide and give up oxygen, right? So we are destroying that by cutting down trees. And then also clean water, which is also provided by, contributed by trees. And then the global temperatures are going up. Why? Because we are cutting down all the forests, the Amazon forests, but all the tropical rainforests are being cut down to make way for, to make room for industries, so that more factories can come up and grow. So, that's why Srila Prabhupada says that if you live the Brahminical way of life, then not only will we be able to live materially a sufficient, a happy life, simple life, but a life of abundance, right? A life of abundance. And also spiritually, we will be able to progress. And then in this Srila Prabhupada 1.10.4, he says, when we can get everything that we want from the land and the cows, then why do we want to have these factories to produce things like radios and cars and machinery and all these other things? They are not needed, that's not necessary. So that's why it's in this purport, he mentioned clearly that Brahminical culture is very important to cultivate for us to prosper spiritually as well as materially. So these qualities can actually take us to that level where we will be able to progress in our spiritual life. Because, see, Vaishnava values are very good values, but like I said, if they are supported by being Brahminical, by following these Brahminical qualities, then we end up progressing much faster. And we don't commit offenses. You see, because if you see the passing of Amrish Maharaj in the Vasamuni, the Vasamuni is also a great sage, and the Amrish Maharaj is a great devotee of the Lord. But if we see how the Vasamuni, because he felt offended because Amrish Maharaj couldn't wait for him to break the fast, then he became angry and he suddenly produced demon to kill him. But Amrish Maharaj didn't get angry, he did not retaliate, although he could. So, if you see that a Vaishnava supported with Brahminical qualities can progress a lot more than another Vaishnava who is not so much, who has pride in him, or who has, because the Vasamuni had a bit of pride in him, he had anger in him, and because of his anger, he used it to say that every time you show anger, you lose your spiritual potency. So, having this anger actually put him on a level lower than Amrish Maharaj, because Amrish Maharaj was not practicing like a sage, he was a king, he was living in a kingdom. Yet his renunciation was much higher and his surrender was much higher. So then even though the Vasamuni was a sage and he was living the life of austerity, but in his mind he still had this amount of anger which sort of put him in an embarrassing situation where he had to go through all these different, and he had to get forgiveness in the end from Amrish Maharaj. So Vaishnava qualities when supported by Brahminical culture will actually put you on a platform which is much higher than just if you only follow Brahminical culture. So I will end here and ask if there are any questions or comments or corrections. Yes,
but in this verse, Lord Krishna is so favored with the Brahmanas. So is it so favored with the Brahmanas, the Vaishnava Brahmanas, or all the Brahmanas?
No, that's why it is mentioned that, see, in one sense, he is favored to Brahmanas, all the Brahmanas. Because a Brahman is someone who has at least surrendered to a supreme authority. Right? But, like I said, Srila Prabhupada in this chapter 64 of Krishna book, he actually enumerates what are the qualities of these Brahmanas that made them so elevated. and that make them so dear to Krishna, and he's actually saying that you feed the Brahmanas and then I'll be more satisfied. So these are the qualities that he mentions, is that they are actually devoted to the Supreme Lord. They work towards the ultimate goal of life, and along with that they are practicing Brahminical culture. If you are practicing Brahminical culture, like for example, a lot of Brahmanas are practicing this culture, but it can be Mayavadis. They can be, because if you read chapter 7, one of the portion, the Prabhupada mentioned that some devotees of Krishna, they worship Krishna because they want to merge into the effulgence. You see, so they are also a class of Brahmanas, but then they are not Vaishnava Brahmanas. Right? So it is clearly mentioned here that you have to be a Vaishnava Brahmana, which is very rare. And those Brahmanas, Krishna, the Lord is talking about those Brahmanas in this verse. That they are strictly Vaishnava Brahmanas. Others are of course also favored because they have at least taken up some path to Krishna consciousness, to progress spiritually. And they are better than the atheistic people who actually only believe in materialistic way of life. They even deny the existence of God. So yes, they are better than them, and Krishna does favor them. But then he says, ye thamamu padhinte tamsthel. To the extent that you surrender unto me, to that extent I reciprocate with you. So these Brahmanas want to merge in the fullness of the Lord, they can only get there. Those who want to do religious activities, follow the scriptures, yes, they are following a higher authority, they are following the scriptures, but they are following to either attain a good life, a life of opulence in this very world, or they want to attain heavenly planets in the next life. So there, that is what they will get. Krishna says, I will not interfere with your free will. You get what you ask for if you follow the rules and the scriptures. So that is what the different classes. So and amongst all these, the Vaishnava Brahmanas are the highest.
So in this verse, he is talking about the Vaishnava Brahmanas.
Yes.
Two online questions. One is, Don't we become conscious
or don't we become conscious? Okay, so there is, that's a very good question. Because it is also said, Chaito Dharma Marjanam, when we chant the holy names of the Lord, then it cleanses all the unwanted things in the heart, which is true. But do you want to also consciously work on the anarthas in your heart, or do you want to just give it on to the holy name? Okay, let the holy name do the job. But even if I see these vices in myself, I'm not going to do anything about them. I'm just going to. So that's how you look at it. So there is. So sometimes we consciously work on a problem, and sometimes we consciously work on some issues that we have, and sometimes we just let it go, let it come. We take as it comes. No. So this is. That's the Shri Prabhupada also says. First be conscious and then Krishna conscious, which means you be aware of the Brahmanical principles, you be aware of the spiritual knowledge, and then you move. See, for example, Srila Prabhupada gives the example of a marriage party, right? He says there's a marriage party and they want to cross the river and go to the other side, right? So they all of them get together. It's still early in the morning, it's dark. So they get into this boat and the person is rowing the boat and they're starting to move. But they have been, for a couple of hours, they've been sitting in the boat, and then the sun rises. And they realize that they are where they were. They didn't move an inch because they didn't untie the rope that was tying the boat to the riverbank. So this is how it is. You can keep rowing, you can keep chanting the holy names of the Lord. But if you are not conscious of your conduct and your behavior, and if you're leaving it only to Krishna, may you fix it. You do the cleansing, but we will not consciously work on it, and it is very slow. We are making ages, And then also, it's like committing offenses on the strength of the holy name. You think you are chanting the holy names, but truthfulness, honesty is a problem with you. That's fine. We still do. No, you should work on these principles because Krishna says they are very dear to me. This coming.
Other question is, could you discuss about the significance of punctuality in deity worship?
Punctuality in deity worship, yes. So Srila Prabhupada says punctuality is a Brahmin quality. So when obviously deity worship, you have to be punctual, because we are temple, as you know, we have very high standards of deity worship. Punctuality means you start before time. If you have to start a service at, say, 5 a.m. in the morning, you are there 10 minutes before, just to make sure things are in order, everything is in place, and then you are able to start on time. So punctuality, why do we follow punctuality? You see, because the idea is to make us understand that we are not the bosses. Somebody else is the boss here. Somebody else is the Supreme Lord, and we are the servants. So we are here to serve. So when we follow the punctuality, the rule of punctuality, what does it mean? That we are actually submitting to the fact that we are here to serve. So we will follow the rules that are given to us, whatever is needed to do that service. So that's why we follow punctuality. Not that you do what you want to do. You're doing the service, but so there's two good reasons. One is you're doing the service, yes, very nice service. If somebody's a great cook, they can cook dishes for the Lord. But then after that, the pots are all left for somebody else to take care of the pots. The kitchen is not cleaned properly afterwards. That's not good. And then, or if you, the offering is not done on time, then how are we considering the Lord as the Supreme Lord? And we're doing our own thing. We are following our own mind. Right? So it's like putting more rules on ourselves, taking it on ourselves to say, okay, I will do this for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. And punctuality, cleanliness, truthfulness, austerity, it's all coming back category where we follow these for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. Anything else? Thank you. Granth Rajshama Bhagavatam Ki, Srinagar Upad.